Andrew Chang and Darren Tay are two-thirds of Malaysia's Shamash, and tonight they've joined The Antidote. Guys, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
What about telling us about how Shamash came together and who we're missing tonight?
So Shamash is a really long story, but let me try to kind of count it down a little bit. My old band, it was a band called Necromancite. It was from the 90s. And it really quite didn't work out. And I had written a bunch of songs. It was just me, and I remember actually kind of bouncing this off with Darren, because Darren's, you know, kind of like a veteran in the scene, you know, just kind of getting his opinions. And eventually, you know, we just decided to just kind of pull together our resources and, you know, start a project. And we decided to name it Shamash. Alex was actually Darren's bandmate in another project before, and is a good friend of mine. We attend the same church, and kind of roped him in. And that's how Shamash was born.
Now, Darren, you've got to talk to me for a minute, because Andre has been saying prior to us starting the interview that you are the greatest musician in all of Asia.
I don't think that's entirely true. But Andre's been a really good friend for the longest time. He's quite a legendary icon himself, seeing that he's one of the pioneers of Christian metal in Asia in the 90s. So when I started my first band with Alex and two of our other friends, Jeff and Edmund, it was, you know, kind of a thing. You know, we said, okay, we're going to start a Christian rock band, and we want to try to follow in Necromancite's footsteps. You know, we'll just try and play as many shows as we can. Fast forward to that, while I was having like this whole thing going on with Amia 3, which was my first band, I had written all these acoustic songs and, you know, very emo, very Dashboard Confessional, Taking Back Sunday kind of vibe. And
that sounds very metal.
Yeah. So it just kind of like bloomed from there. And then Amia 3 took a back seat, and then I just focused on my main band and Honest Mistake. And from then on, you know, I was able to get into various festivals locally and regionally. Metal is still very much in my blood, and you know, the new album that we just put out as an Honest Mistake, you know, it's got a little bit more of the heavier elements as compared to how it started, where it was a bit more poppy sounding. So when Shamash, you know, when Andre spoke to me, you know, about having me on board, I was like, okay, you know, it's the pandemic, we're super free, I didn't have a job then, so let's just try something out. So with all these songs that were produced in the new Shamash album, it was more of just myself experimenting and just trying to create songs that I was never able to create on my own. Mm-hmm. Together with Andre and his roots in metal, it just kind of happened pretty organically. So, yeah.
Well, it was 2020 when I first heard about Shamash, and that's with EP, Suffering Servant. And that has a killer title track. That sounds like a bad pun, but it's about Christ's crucifixion. And it says, why did someone have to die? Why did someone have to pay a price I couldn't pay myself so I could live? So you got to tell me, like, at a show, has the audience asked about that song?
Dave, Shamash, at this point of time, has pretty much been a studio band. We've not done shows yet. So that's really where we're at. But we've had a lot of people ask us about that. It's been a very popular track whenever Easter comes around.
You two are the first guests I've ever had from Malaysia. So I'd really like to hear about the music scene in Kuala Lumpur. What's it like?
Malaysia is filled with all kinds of scenes, you know, like, so I was able to see the explosion of the independent music scene late 90s, early 2000s, you know, it was emo and grunge and a lot of punk and ska, and it has trickled down to what the scene is today. There's the hardcore kids, you know, the metal kids, you know, and then that you have the really punk scene, and then you've got the indie pop stuff, you've got the singer-songwriters. So basically it's a mishmash of everything. There's just so much music going on every single week, you know. So since the pandemic, the lockdowns have, you know, been done, and now things have opened up. There's a festival pretty much almost every week. We've got artists coming from all over the world, and we've got artists from the region as well. I think the scene is just really healthy at this point of time. But it's also very different in many ways because we are a multicultural and multilingual country. So the scene is also divided in terms of genres and also languages. To be able to see each scene kind of like grow and have its own following, it's exciting. So especially in 2024, to see all these things happening, it's great. You know, everybody's just top quality right now, you know, comparable with any band in the world.
Well, you know, something else that ties into what we're talking about is with faith, because your country is predominantly Muslim. So how accepting is the country or your city with your band's Christian message?
I think, you know, this has been something that we've kind of had to manage since the 90s. When Necromancer came along in the 90s, I mean, let's just face it, there weren't a lot of Christian bands out there. And if there were, they wouldn't metal. Like, I think we had a band called Joshua Race, which was kind of like Petra. When we got signed to Pony Cannon, which was a mainstream Japanese label, right? We found ourselves in the scene playing with bands that were mainstream secular metal, right? Where they were kind of like, you know, having that Sepultura vibes, you know, or, you know, some of that, you know, oh, hey, I'm satanic kind of vibes, you know, only to realize that, you know, it was just a persona that they had because of, you know, the imagery required for metal. And so we ended up playing with a lot of bands like that in the 90s, and it was no big deal. And they knew we were Christians, you know. At the end of the day, it was good fun, right? So, you know, I'd often joke with them and, you know, say things like, hey, you know, we're playing the same kind of genre. It's just that, you know, I'm just different bosses, you know. And we laugh about it. And you know, we're still good friends. Like, I have a friend in the scene who actually runs a label called Code Lord Records. And so you've got a lot of bands in there that have all this satanic imagery, but when you meet up with them, they're the nicest guys ever. You know, they're not actually satanic. You know, they're all very devout, you know, Muslims for the part, right? It's just the persona that they kind of put on. And, you know, the scene in Malaysia, the metal scene is a little bit, you know, different in that sense. There's a very good sense of belonging in the scene. Yeah, I mean, there were a few people in the scene that would probably look at you and be like, Christian metal, that sounds ridiculous. But, you know, they're tolerated. They never ostracize us. And I think this is really one of the strengths of Malaysia, I guess, as a country and a community.
I want to switch back to the EP for a minute. That also has another favorite of mine, At the Throne. Part of the lyrics are, his nail-pierced hands, I see them all to him give praise, the Holy One whom God hath raised. Obviously, that song is about Christ. And the songs on the EP carry that theme. Is that why you titled it Suffering Servant?
Yes. So Suffering Servant is actually based off the Isaiah 53 passage on the Suffering Servant. It also kind of ties to the band's identity. Shamash means servant or ritual servant, right? Mm. The song At the Throne was a song that I penned with a vision of what it's like when everything's done. Our final destination, if you will, you know, is at the throne room of God, worshiping Him. And that song has got a very unusual portion in the middle where it kind of switches. And not many people actually realize that portion was actually a worship song that I had written, but it never saw the light of day anywhere. So I basically had a little bit of a space and I said, hey, you know what, maybe this worship song will kind of fit in there because of the theme and the lyric. And it just blended in really well. And that was actually the favorite part of my song, by the way. And At the Throne is my favorite song from the EP, personally.
Good. I'm glad I picked your favorite. Well, now things have changed because Shamash has been teasing everybody by releasing singles over the past couple years. Now you have your first full length, Done With Misery, coming out June 14th. Does this album have a particular focus?
Okay, I think before we get to that, I think an explanation is kind of due on why it took so long and why we had singles. The initial plan was to actually drop this album a lot earlier, but I guess midway through the process of dropping the singles leading up to a full drop, our label got bought over by Mythic Panda. So it, you know, there was a little bit of work that needed to be done at that point of time. There was a new management for the label, and they've been nothing but a blessing to us. And I think that pause really did help us in the sense that we were able to kind of go back to the materials and rework it slightly. So it's a lot better sounding than it was, actually. So it's a blessing in disguise. So that's why it took a few years, by the way.
You have to explain something to me. Why is it that metal bands love including Latin in their lyrics? Because I don't know anybody who understands Latin. You even use it as a song title, Nos Pergamos in Domine Saltium. So the song has a verse that Shamash has translated as, I offer thanks to you, living and eternal King, for you have mercifully restored my soul within me. Your faithfulness is great. But you know what I haven't figured out is what you were translating it from.
From Hebrew.
From Hebrew. So that's actually thank you.
You're talking about the part where I'm saying in Hebrew is Ani Mode and so on and so forth. So that is actually a benediction that if you are a religious Jew and you wake up in the morning, that's a benediction you will say to kind of like thank God for returning your spirit to you in the morning, and then you would wake up. So the song actually has got, I've drawn on two different cultural points. One would have been the Latin and one would have been the Hebrew. Because I think it's very important. Christianity is a very interesting creed. You know, we were birthed from the Jewish matrix. And, you know, when it reached Europe, you know, that whole Roman culture was there, and Latin became very important and prominent at one point of time. I thought both languages were beautiful. Latin is almost like a dead language now. Hebrew was a dead language until its resurrection, you know, when the state of Israel was born. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that both languages were just very beautiful, and I think they express themselves very differently. Like, I like that whole Latin choral sounds. You would have heard it in some of the tracks in Suffering Servant. We didn't carry too much of that forward with Done With Misery, except for this track. I think this track really has that vibe. But I also wanted to inject a little bit of that Hebrew culture inside as well, because I feel that as Christians, it's very important to understand where our faith came from. And I guess it enriches the whole experience of understanding the context of our faith, because Christ came from, you know, that particular society.
Something that we should be talking about is your music style, because I do think that what makes Shamash stand out is your combination of melodic metal, death metal, and metalcore. It's got to be hard for any band to stand out from the crowd. Is this the reason for going that route?
I think with the band, with the sound, it's a combination of what Andre likes personally and what I like. So that's why there's the metalcore portion, and that's mostly coming from my end. And whatever Andre has that sounded more melodic metal and death metal, it's mostly him. So we just put everything together. To be honest, all these songs were written throughout the pandemic, and they were all written at home. So it was just Andre sending tracks over to me, and I would produce some of the drums. And everything, to be honest, is done just all in the computer. You know, there's very little real drums. To be honest, there's none at all. So the way we produced it mostly started with the drums first, and then we'll just drop in all the guitars and the bass and vocal ideas. So it was written mostly music first, and then came the lyrics. Putting together all of our influences, you know, that was kind of how it developed. If you listen to the latest track, Take Me As I Am, you know, it's got more of a Slipknot, Soulfly, Sepultura kind of vibe, because I just felt, okay, you know, maybe we needed one song that had this kind of energy. And then with War for Jerusalem, that was, you know, has had a more Arabic vibe. You know, it's more old school. It's got a traditional death metal sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, it's just a mixture of all kinds of stuff that we liked, and we just put them all together. But all of which is still under the banner of metal. So I don't think, you know, it would confuse fans or anything, you know, but it's just giving people options and variety as well. And then there's the melodic part where there's a bit of clean vocals, and then there's the heavier stuff with breakdowns and the screams. So it was quite a unique experience because, you know, throughout the writing process, you know, we were able to learn off of each other as well. And that was actually a good thing.
Now, you were the one that brought up about the War of Jerusalem. You ever thought about that you're actually being prophetic about what's going on with Israel right now?
Wow. You know, Dave, I'm glad you kind of brought that up. The War for Jerusalem was a song we penned out 3 years ago. It had been sitting in a production limbo because of the takeover with Rod Wheeler. And the song, we had it remixed and re-engineered with Derek Corzine in Texas. And we had just received the tracks, I think, on the 1st or 2nd of October. And October 7th, Hamas attacked Israel.
Wow.
That song was very appropriate. And I remember I was on a call with Jairus, the owner of Rod Wheeler, and I'm like, you know what? We weren't planning to drop this song as a single, but I think people need to listen to this song, you know, because, you know, the whole problem with the world at that point of time was, is either you're with Israel or with Palestine, you know. No one's ever talking about peace. And I think as Christians, we should always lean towards peace, especially from the standpoint that we're in. We know things need to happen, but, you know, we should always be peacemongers rather than warmongers. So I told Jairus, I'm like, you know what? I know this wasn't scheduled, but I think we need to drop the track. And so we did.
Yeah, the track was also dropped at a very crucial time. And especially out here in Malaysia, you know, which is a country that's predominantly Muslim, you know, a lot of people were just bashing everything that's been happening. You know, they're like, oh, you know, death to Israel and stuff like that. So it was quite sensitive. And personally for me, I was actually quite worried, you know, considering that the song has Jerusalem in the title. But if you read into the context of the song, you know, it's just really talking about peace and one day all of us will be together, you know. So that's kind of an interesting song to release at a period that's so tough. So I really hope that, you know, we didn't cause any, like, division or anything, but instead brought people together.
I hate to admit this, but you know what? I've got a whole shopping list of songs I want to talk about. You're going to have to put up with me.
Go ahead.
I understand where you guys were going with the title track, Done With Misery. I mean, part of a verse says, "The misery is real, the honor we just killed. The hole we dug is far and deep for us to stay." Now, by that, are you saying that by becoming a Christian, your life is going to be perfect?
Most definitely not. The core theme of the song, I mean, lyrically, right, is talking about repentance and redemption. But it starts off with, you know, the writings on the wall, which is, you know, it kind of alludes to, like, what happened with Daniel. God always offers us a warning. Listen, you know, your life is going down a wrong road. You need to turn. And the song basically talks about that. And like I said, it's like, you know, like what happened in the book of Daniel when the writing was on the wall. But it also has that call where it says, you know, fall down before him, give praise, invite him, be born again, you know, which is a different perspective. It's from the book of John where Jesus says, very truly I say unto you, you know, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they're born again. And I think that's really the centrality of the song. You know, your life is miserable. You're heading towards ruin. The only way to really have fullness in your life is to be born again. And that means lay down your life and offer it up to Christ. And that misery that, you know, accompanies a lot of us, it'll be taken care of. That's basically the core of the song. It's not saying that life will be perfect, but it simply means that you'll be on track to your true calling.
You did do one song that was really personal, and that's In Memoriam. I'll remember my time with you and all the things that we've been through, all the ups and downs of the happiness. I won't forget you. I never will. Who is the song about?
This song was actually written of my late mom. She passed on during the lockdown. She passed on from COVID-19. It was a terrible experience, Dave. My mom actually went to the hospital to get some work done because she had, I think, some bleeding. But what happened was, at the end of the day, she contracted COVID-19 in the hospital, and she passed on. And so it was a problem. It was a serious problem.
Oh no, that's awful.
Yeah, I was in a situation where, gosh, I'm having such a hard time just to frame the words. But I had sent my mom to the hospital to get work done on intestinal issues, and the next thing I know, I get a call from the hospital to say that she's got COVID-19 and that she's in ICU, and it was a tough one. To make the long story short, she passed on, and it was a very dark time for me simply because we couldn't have a funeral service.
I know, that's awful for so many people.
It was horrible. I really don't know how to explain it, but it was painful. So I remember I had just collected my mom's ashes, and we had to intern it at a columbarium, where you put all the ashes. And I got back. I was really devastated by the whole thing. Because I thought my mom deserved better. At least a sending off, a funeral service. But we couldn't do it because of the lockdowns. I got home. I remember I got out of the shower and I looked at my guitar. I picked up the guitar and I penned the song down. So the words that came out were unfiltered. Normally when I write songs, I'll pen down lyrics and I'll kind of like tweak it as I get along to just kind of like, make it a little bit more refined. But with this song, it just flowed out and I kept it raw as it is. I didn't edit it. It was really just from my heart. Basically me talking to my mom. And I won't lie to you, man. I was actually crying when I recorded some of the verses. And it was very heavy on my heart.
So doing this song, has that been healing for you?
Yes, in a way. For me, this is like me telling my mom, I'm sorry we couldn't have had a funeral for you, but my little quote-unquote offering to you, a little memorial I built for you. I remember that, I was talking to Ryan Robart from Altivic while we were doing this. He was like, hey, brother, would you like me to do a solo for the track? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I sent it over to him. And so that beautiful solo that we hear in that song is by Ryan Robart from Altivic. And I think he did a wonderful job. It's a really beautiful solo. And it went really well with the song. Like I said, this song is probably the most personal song to me in the whole album. And I also liked what Darren did to the song, because initially when the song was sent to him, it was very raw. I think Darren added a lot of texture to the song.
The song had an effect on me, so I'm sure it's going to be affecting other listeners to the song. Well, you know what? I guess I should be finishing up our talk, but I want to pull in my top pick from Done With Misery, and that's Take Me As I Am. I mean, that song is incredibly powerful. It's blazing fast, and it carries a great message about coming back to Christ. Doesn't that song sum up what Shamash is all about?
Yeah, so earlier on I mentioned that with Take Me As I Am, I just wanted it to be a really anthemic track and very fast-paced. It's got a bit of that Soulfly and Sepultura Il Nino vibe with the percussions. And it's got like the can sounds from, very signature of Slipknot. So I just wanted to have all these elements in this song. And I just said, Andre, let's write a song that sounds like Slipknot, But how the music bit came about, it was actually written again during the pandemic, and it was supposed to be a joke track. I was just making fun at what the government was saying and what the citizens were saying and stuff like that. So I think it it was initially named Lockdown, you know. It was only like a 30-second track. I liked the vibe. I took it, and then we developed this song. So the chunk of it in the verse, it was mostly written by Andre, I believe, you know. But in terms of the phrasing, you know, we worked it out together. So that was kind of cool. But the chorus, it was mainly me. And I'm just on a journey right now, you know, with faith where I'm at a different place. And I just wanted to reflect that as, you know, kind of like a confession as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's kind of like asking for forgiveness and, you know, trying to just find myself again. So that's why, you know, in the chorus, it was just mostly me singing. And I think I did a bit of the screams as well. When it came to the bridge in the breakdown, that was mostly me as well. You know, God, give me a heart of gold. I think that was what I wrote. And, you know, it's not anything biblical, you know, but I think it's more of like a cry of, you know, repentance. Yeah, so that's kind of what the context of the song is and how it was inspired. And I just felt that I needed to write something that truly reflected a journey of a believer, you know, that you're not always going to be on top of the mountains all the time. You know, sometimes you're going to be down in the valley. You want to be able to write songs that would resonate with people wherever they're at in the journey of faith.
You know what, Dave, I think the core thing that I think would have really resonated with a lot of people in this album is that it's just very personal. If you read the lyrics, it comes from a place that comes from our hearts. You know, it's a very personal thing. I think every song has got a personal touch to it. And I think it comes across. And Take Me As I Am is a very good example. I believe this really came from Darren's heart. It translated really well. I enjoyed playing it. It's actually one of my favorite tracks.
It's funny that you brought up about the personal aspect. And it was something I was avoiding talking about because Suffering Servant was great, but it was very stiff, very structured. It was almost textbook. But this time, you can really get in and get absorbed into the lyrics and the songs.
Yeah. You know what? I also share the same opinion. And it's also simply because Suffering Servant was predominantly based off some demos that I'd written when I was trying to put my old band Necromancite together again. And I had been away from metal music for about 23 years. I'd stepped away from that. So yeah, it's kind of a little bit more formula somewhat. And yeah, I get that. But with Suffering Servant, you know, it kind of prepared us for Done With Misery. It was me shifting gears again. So unlike Darren, who was, you know, doing music quite regularly, I was kind of like away from it for quite a fair bit. I was mostly just doing stuff in church, worship music. So I'd kind of been away from metal for a bit. So it was kind of like me getting inducted back into the scene. So yeah, I feel the same.
Well, you know what, guys? I'm going to go to bed. And since we're 12 hours apart, you guys get to actually start your day. So I really do appreciate the two of you coming for this talk with The Antidote.
It's been a pleasure, Dave.
Thanks so much. It's such a joy to be able to be on the show.